And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, just trying to figure out who my next coordinator is going to be.
Well, yes, Shane, we just wouldn't be an off season without a Tennessee coaching search of some regard here. So we still got, I think we're going to have some time to wait for that one.
Yeah.
But while we ponder, Shane, the college football rankings, the next to last rankings are out. What do you say we get into that talk?
Let's do it, man.
So, Shane, on Tuesday evening, the SEC became the first conference ever to have 8 teams ranked in the top 25 of the college football playoff poll. I'm going to run those down, and then after I talk about the SEC teams, we'll just break down the top 10. So starting with Alabama at number 1, of course. Georgia, number 4. So they're slated to be in the playoff as of right now. Florida is number 9. LSU, number 10. Kentucky, number 15. Mississippi State, number 18. Texas A&M, 19. And Missouri makes a debut down there at 24. And I'm going to get to why that's important in just a second. But, you know, rounding out the top 10 here, Alabama, Clemson, number 2. Notre Dame, number 3. Already said Georgia, number 4. Oklahoma, number 5, which is important. Ohio State, 6. Michigan, 7. Central Florida, number 8. And, of course, I already noted Florida and LSU round out the top 10. So any thoughts, you know, jump out to you besides that 8 SEC teams ranked in the college football playoff poll?
I'm glad Missouri's finally getting the love they deserve because they've been playing like damn heroes out there. But the fact that we've got 8 teams in the top 25, I mean, there's over 130 teams, and we've got 8 of them in the top 25. That's amazing. So I don't want to hear no shit about Citadel because we have to play each other. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Shane, now let me explain, and for the listeners out there as well, why Missouri being ranked, why that's important. Because, Shane, Alabama, their cross-divisional game, you know, obviously Tennessee, they get that every year. But the other one was Missouri. Mm-hmm. And Georgia beat Missouri as well. So why that's important, it seems like every year when these final teams are set, what is it, the argument that they're making? That one of the key ones the committee likes to make is what is your record against top 25 teams? And they're going specifically off their own poll. So we have another SEC team in here that's played and lost to Alabama and Georgia. So essentially, you know, instead of Alabama being 3-0 against ranked teams, they're now 4-0. And Georgia is now 3-1 as opposed to 2-1. And with this SEC championship game, obviously Alabama or Georgia is going to get another win there. That could be huge, Shane. And another reason why is because, and I think I've said it on the podcast, I know I've said it on the radio, if Georgia loses the SEC championship game, I'm not convinced that they are eliminated from the college football playoff. Of course, if they win, they're in, and I think Alabama would also be in, and Missouri being ranked in there obviously just helps Alabama that much more. So what are your I know I just threw a lot at you, Shane, but what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree with you. And let me ask you a little bit about these other games because I don't follow the other conferences. So Clemson is what, 2?
They're number 2 and they're undefeated.
Who do they play?
They play Pitt in the ACC championship game, and Pitt is not ranked, so.
That's ridiculous. Okay, so we got, all right, so Clemson probably in. So we got Alabama, winner, Georgia. Okay, Notre Dame plays nobody, right?
Right, they're undefeated. They have no conference game, so they're basically in.
All right, and Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma and Ohio State, right? Those are the next two that we're looking at.
Correct.
Who's Oklahoma play?
They're playing Texas, which is ranked number 14.
Okay, okay.
Now imagine, Shane, if Texas wins that game, which they've already beaten Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Texas is clearly not getting in. I think they've got three losses. They're not jumping from 14 to 4. And obviously Oklahoma would be out. So then you come down to Ohio State. And they're playing Northwestern, which is 21.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Ohio State would have a real shot to get in. But if you're looking at an Ohio State team that got smoked by Purdue, that nearly lost to Maryland.
Yeah.
Unless, I mean, if they just destroy Northwestern, I think it's safe to say, and Oklahoma loses, I think it's safe to say Ohio State probably gets in. But if they lose somehow or it's a tight game, I think Georgia, even with the loss, is getting in over Ohio State. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they should. Absolutely. I just – nothing from those other two teams have inspired me to put them in the top four. So the fact that one of these teams is going to be penalized for probably playing the second-best team in the nation, mm-hmm. you know, which way you want to look at it, I think you need to get them both in the playoffs. So this isn't the Georgia that lost to LSU. This is a powerhouse Georgia right now. So
yeah,
I'm not saying that they're going to lose, but even if they did, I don't think that they should be left out of the playoffs.
And I would even argue, Shane, that Georgia should probably be ranked ahead of Notre Dame.
And oh, yeah.
I would not even have an – I haven't watched a ton of Clemson, so I'm not trying to be a complete SEC homer here. But, hell, I mean, South Carolina just tore Clemson's defense a new asshole. I would have no problem with Georgia being ranked number two right now the way they're – I think if they played Clemson tomorrow, I would pick Georgia to win that game.
And that's what kind of drives me nuts a little bit about these rankings is, like, they'll look at a team like UCF that's undefeated and say, well, yeah, they're undefeated, but look who they played. But they don't look at it through the same glasses when they're looking at a team like Notre Dame. You know, we just found out Michigan's not that good, and that was their signature win by 7 points in week one. So how good is Notre Dame right now? USC just fired their coach, didn't make a bowl game. So, I mean, I just think that if you're going to do it to one team, you better do it to all of them. And Notre Dame is nowhere near a top four team right now, especially with the schedule they had.
All right, Shane, so that's all the ranking talks, unless you got anything else before we jump onto another subject. You got anything you wanted to hit on those rankings?
Where'd Tennessee fall at? Did you get that one? Number four from the bottom. just kidding.
Before we jump into our next topic here, I forgot we even had this damn soundbite. We haven't used it since the preseason, so we're going to jump back into it. I think it's time for a little hot seat talk, Shane.
What?
Oh my God, we're burning alive!
Fire! Fire!
Damn hot, real hot! Hotter than this is my shorts, I can cook things in it. Little crotch pot cooking.
Can you tell me what it feels like?
Fool, what is hot? I told you again! When you're born on the sun, it's damn hot!
And of course, the main coach here on the hot seat in the SEC, Shane, old Gus Malzahn, out on the plains coming off a 7-5 win season when they were preseason top 10. And Shane, the story just keeps getting stranger and stranger, and courtesy of Auburn Undercover, which is the Auburn 24/7 site, according to the guy that runs that, I believe his name is Philip Marshall, he's saying that basically Auburn has presented Gus Malzahn with an amended contract which would lower his buyout, take away his power essentially to hire a more expensive assistants, if you will. And I think everyone, the obvious assumption, now this is not being reported, but the assumption is that means Hugh Freeze. I think Gus Malzahn wanted to go after Hugh Freeze, and I think he may have a little bit of a bidding war on his hands for Hugh Freeze, maybe teams like Tennessee, Alabama, maybe some others out there. So basically Auburn is cutting his nuts off there, not allowing him to do that. They're not allowing him to fire Chip Lindsey, his current offense coordinator. Now, Lindsey could still leave of his own volition. He's got a $100,000 bonus coming his way on Sunday, so expect a resolution there within a week. But I don't know, Shane. And it sounds like Gus Malzahn is going to accept these conditions to stay at Auburn. What in the hell do you make of all this news, Shane?
Golly, man. Okay, let me just get this straight. So, Gus, everybody wants Gus gone. It sounds like some heavy boosters definitely want him out. They came up with the money, right? That's what we're hearing.
Right, but I'm not sure that they have a damn coach lined up.
But can they, I mean, is it like an at will? Can they just fire the coach if they want to?
I believe they can, but I don't think they have cause, so they would have to pay his full, you know, $33 million buyout, whatever
okay.
it would be.
So that's what they're trying to do is get him to take, a lesser amount.
Correct.
Okay. And if he doesn't and he sticks around, they're not going to give him the athletic building that he wants. They're not going to let him hire who he wants. They're going to hide his parking spot. They're going to change his passcodes on the computer. I mean, they're just going to make it.
Basically, it sounds like they're fucking with him enough to make him want to leave.
Oh, golly. Why would you want to stick around? I mean, I get there's a lot of money, and you're trying to prove a point, but it seems like if it's got to this point that Gus can probably get almost all, if not all, that money and walk away, man. I mean, they don't want you.
Yeah, and we should keep in mind, Shane, so this is all, you know, this is all being reported. It's not necessarily like, I don't want to say this is everyone at Auburn, but from what I understand at Auburn, it's a very complex place where, you know, you got boosters and the administration, and sometimes the boosters go and interview coaches without the administration knowing. I mean, it's a very weird place. And this is why
it's a new athletic director. Don't forget that, you know.
Right, and a new president, and that the president is the one that signed Gus Malzahn to this huge deal. That was before the AD came on, so the AD inherited this guy. They've both said in recent weeks that Gus Malzahn's coming back. Malzahn says he's coming back, but I don't know if they get this mystery coach, who some people think it's Bob Stoops. Somebody, I don't know. There's really no concrete name out there. But if they get that guy locked in, I'd have to think that Gus Malzahn is gone. But I don't know, Shane. They cannot possibly fire Gus Malzahn for $30-something million and then not have the next guy lined up. They'd, as big as a laughingstock as they seem to be now, it would just be compounded.
Well, maybe that's what they're doing right now. I mean, usually when there's smoke, there's fire, you know, and all these things coming out, maybe the boosters, you know, having some meetings with some bigs that they're wanting to bring down there and potentially court to Auburn, you know?
Right, yeah.
Who would you think, let's just say Gus comes out tomorrow, he's fired, they've made an agreement. Who's the short list there for Auburn?
I mean, I don't really have one, Shane, because I think it's got to be someone like Mike Leach.
Oh, wow.
But I wouldn't,
you think so?
Because I think Leach would take the job.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know, because you got to think if they're getting rid of him, they're hiring someone that's high profile that would want the job.
Yeah.
And I'm searching for names here, but I don't think they can get maybe Mark Stoops. Would take it, but are you going to sell that to? I don't think Auburn fans would be too happy. I think Mark Stoops may win SEC Coach of the Year, but I still don't know if they'd be happy with firing Gus Malzahn for Mark Stoops. You know what I mean? Like, they have to bring in maybe Jeff Brohm.
Mm-hmm.
That could be one, but.
But then again, is it that signature hire? I mean, the fans, I mean, I'm telling you, because I'm in these shoes before. Whoever they bring in, you're not going to be happy with. You may be happy that Gus is gone,
right?
But, you know, it's going to take some convincing from whoever this new head coach is, because it ain't going to be Gruden, baby. It ain't going to be Stoops. It ain't going to be Dabo or anything like that. I mean, it's going to be a coach that probably has a little baggage coming in and is ready to. You know, it's just looking for that shot. So
maybe like right. A guy like I know Tennessee fans were pissed off. This guy was mentioned, but NC State coach Dave Doran, his team was ranked all last year and ranked most of this year.
What about Hugh Freeze
for head coach?
Yeah,
No.
No?
I don't think the SEC would even allow it. I mean...
Oh, okay.
So here's the speculation, Shay. The job that Tyson Helton just got at Western Kentucky, mm-hmm. Hugh Freeze tried to get that job, and they're choosing damn Helton over Hugh Freeze. I mean, that's how low people think of Hugh Freeze right now.
Wow.
He's basically untouchable when you talk about head coaching.
But I'm telling you, man, there's teams out there that are desperate and willing to try things. And the stuff that I'm hearing out of Auburn, they're starting to sound a little desperate, like they're willing to try anything just to be competitive and beat Alabama again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a buddy send me a tweet today saying, you know, why not? Keep firing, hiring till you find the one that can beat Alabama consistently, because that's exactly what Alabama used to do. So, I don't know, until they found Saban anyway. So
how about this? You just got me thinking, Shane. Maybe they don't want Gus Malzahn to hire Hugh Freeze because they think that'll save his damn job and he'll be there forever.
Oh, I mean, hell, if they ain't going to let him build the building that's helping recruits, or they're not going to let him get any help for coaching staff. They got, if this is true, and this hasn't came, they haven't came out and said this is true, but if they did, this is a slippery slope, brother, because next thing you know, you're going to start losing recruits. There may be some transfers after this season, and Auburn may take 10 steps down just because of this fiasco down there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Shane, so another coaching, I wouldn't say hot seat, clearly, but coaching carousel moment here. We've talked about this for a number of, I think, two podcasts in a row now. Derek Mason attached to the Colorado job.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to Andy Sparks of the Tennessean, is the Nashville paper here. He's actually touched base with Derek Mason and wrote a report about, he's asked, you know, a direct comment about these rumors. And we don't have an audio clip because there's not one out there, but it's just, this was via text exchange, according to Adam Sparks. But here's what Derek Mason had to say about the speculation that his name is attached to the Colorado job. My sole focus at this particular time is on the recruiting and preparing my team to win a bowl game for Vanderbilt. As you see, we are continuing to build something very special here on the West End. To comment on speculation at this time would be unfair to my student athletes and Vanderbilt. Nashville is our city, Commodore Nation, anchor down, and let's ride.
All the way to Colorado. Emoji. Wink emoji.
I appreciate what he's doing there. I mean, I think he's being somewhat professional, but I'm not feeling too confident if I'm a Vanderbilt fan. Are you, Shane?
No. I am not. So to comment on speculation at this time would be unfair. I mean, yes and no are a three-letter word and a two-letter word, Ed. And he decided to say to comment on it would be unfair to the athletes here at Vanderbilt. So, yeah, his ass is gone, man.
would Vanderbilt, do you think, be an attractive job if he did leave?
Say that again?
So if Derek Mason leaves,
yes.
Basically what I'm asking you, Shane, is what caliber of coach could they attract, do you think? You know, because Derek Mason, he's a very successful defensive coordinator before he came to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Would they have to go that route again, a coordinator, or do you think they could get an established head coach somewhere, maybe from somewhere like, I know, Troy's coach or something of that caliber, a guy like that, do you think they could get?
Maybe. Who was the Division II coach we were looking at last year? Something like that.
Mike Houston?
Yeah. Somebody like him, or mm-hmm. And like you said, a proven coordinator at a Power Five conference. I think that's what it is. I mean, because say what you want, Vandy right now is a stepping stone, and it's led to a Penn State job and potentially a Colorado job. So if you get a hungry young coordinator, you're going to find you a coach.
Or Hugh Freeze.
I don't see Hugh doing something like that. I think Hugh could probably go to a team that is, I mean, what you want to do if you're a coordinator, and just my opinion, you want to go to a winning ball club, somebody that's got a lot of talent, just because you know, like these Alabama coordinators, they're getting a lot of praise. And, yeah, are they good? Maybe. I mean, they've proved me wrong. I thought they would struggle this year. But it's a lot easier when you got a plethora of five stars to go out there and do your offense or do your defense. So if I think that would be a better run for somebody like you just to go out there. And then if their offense if the offense is very, I don't know, like electric, then a bigger job will open up rather than going to Vanderbilt and struggling.
All right, Shane. So, again, here's another coach not on the hot seat. I don't want to say that. But you and I have questioned the future of his program.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're talking about Ole Miss coach Matt Luke.
Yeah.
He had a... I didn't even know they did this, Shane, but they had a press conference, an end-of-the-season press conference. And, oh boy, Luke, man, he was fired up for this one, Shane. I think if he kind of came out with this kind of energy more often, I think I'd have a little bit more confidence in him. But let's just play – I mean, this is how he damn opened the thing, and we're going to play these comments, and then we'll jump into what he had to say.
Over the last few years, this program has been through a lot, and the people that that are the most important, our players and our fans, they didn't sign up for any of it. Y'all don't deserve any of this. I appreciate the fact y'all have high expectations, but nobody's got more expectations than I do. Every time I walk on that field, I expect to win. I know exactly what it takes to get us out of this. When I came here in 1995, we were on probation, and I was a team captain in 97 and 98 when we were coming out of it. I know what it takes to turn programs around. When I went to Tennessee in 2006, I was part of a turnaround there. I went to Duke in 2008, and I was part of one of the biggest turnarounds in college football. And then we did it again here in 2012. We will win here. Is it going to be easy? No. Is it going to take a lot of hard work? Absolutely. But for the first time since 2014, I can walk in a room into a living room and not talk about bowl bans or sanctions. I can sell everything that's great about Ole Miss. And everybody in this room and everybody that I'm talking to knows what makes Ole Miss special, and that's family. And it's more important now than ever that this Ole Miss family move forward together. But we will get this done, and we will win here.
So, Shane, all it took was a damn egg bowl brawl to get some emotion out of Matt Luke and got him all fired up. I thought he made a lot of good points. He's seen a lot of turnarounds. He knows what it's going to take. But knowing it and doing it, obviously two different things. And, you know, I gotta give Ole Miss credit. Their recruiting hasn't fallen off a cliff. But I can't imagine how difficult it's been, you know, with all these negative recruitings from the sanctions and not being able to go to bowl games and whatnot. But they're still, I mean, they're out recruiting. Now, of course, this is the bottom of the SEC, but I mean, they're out recruiting Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky, and now that all that's out of the way, they still have a fun offense with a great offensive coordinator, although a minute into that, apparently the offensive coordinator's looking around at jobs. He commented on that. But if they can keep Phil Longo, I don't know. I think they've got, you know, hell, it's an SEC job and all that crap's behind him now. What are your thoughts on just Matt Luke, everything he had to say there?
I'm just being honest here. It felt like Matt Luke was trying to convince the fans that he's right for the job. You know, it just the way he presented that, the way he was addressing it. I know you can't see it because this is a podcast, but if you watch the video, I mean, he is looking out at the people that are watching it and saying, just give me a shot. You know, we had some trouble. It's behind us. You know, now we're on an even playing field. We can have these recruits come up for visits. And I mean, it is going to be a world of difference. But now he's going to be judged like every other coach in the SEC. And they won't stand for five win seasons for long down there in Ole Miss.
Right, but again, I think maybe now it is a little bit more of an attractive job because they've moved beyond the sanctions. But again, I think a lesson can be learned from the likes of Kentucky this year and maybe even South Carolina. that a lot of these teams, they don't need to be hiring a guy and firing him in two or three seasons.
Yeah.
If there's progress. Now, I see what you're saying. Like, if they win three or four games next year,
mm-hmm.
maybe you do move on from them because they're beyond the sanctions, they're on the beyond the recruiting restrictions. But if they win, you know, 6-7 games, I know that's not an outstanding year, but I think you stick with them. If they only win 8 the next year, I think you stick with them because he is an Ole Miss guy. He says he's been through all this stuff. I mean, the recruiting issues that they've been under, we still probably have not seen the full effects of those. I mean, that's going to hurt next year and the year beyond because they may just now be getting back to full strength and they're getting, you know, they don't have like a top five class by any means. They were signing top five classes when the guys that are going to leave early now, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
They had some really good talent. They're going to lose a lot of that. I mean, I don't know. I just think that as long as they don't go completely backward the next year or two, I don't know. I think they would be wise to stick with them.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of cousin chains running around there saying, okay, now it is an attractive job. Let's get our coach. You know, I think Luke did good, but all right, come on. I think that, you know, he hears that. His agents hear that. So I think part of that was him selling himself. And the thing about Ole Miss is I don't see them getting better over one off season. I just don't, because they're losing so much talent on offense. I mean, they're revamping everything. Hopefully the defense gets better, keeps them in some of these games.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that Coach Luke's got a tall order down there, brother.
I keep forgetting there's a damn game involving an SEC team this weekend that's not Alabama or Georgia.
The championship.
The championship. So, yeah, so it's a normal game week here for South Carolina, even though they're just playing Akron. It's basically a spring game down there in Columbia. So Will Muschamp met with the media like he always does on a Tuesday. And, hell, Shane, he, like we've seen him before, he was pretty opinionated about something. He was a little heated. And this one was on Jake Bentley not being recognized as an SEC Offensive Player of the Week, despite two players getting that honor this week. So here's Will Muschamp. This was the highlight of his presser here on Tuesday.
But I do think it's important when a young man does some special things to get recognized for it. And, you know, he's the first quarterback in Southeastern Conference history to throw for that many yards against a top five team and 5 touchdowns in the history of the league. Never been done before. That's pretty impressive, in my opinion. But I have learned, I've been in this league a long time, so I have learned that, you know, we have a saying that it just means more. It just means more sometimes depending on what your logo is. So call it like it is. Next question.
Do you want to drop your mic?
Nah.
Okay.
It just means more depending on the logo you're wearing. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know, man. I had no idea that this was a record or they even kept up with that. So the record was what? Was it 500 yards? Is that what it was? 500 yards against a
top five team?
Okay, top five team. So that's a record. But they lost. You know what I'm saying? It's like you had to throw 500 yards because you couldn't stop them on defense. So let's pump the brakes. I get it. You know, he's playing a little bit better, but a little too late, in my opinion. I mean, I think he had some opportunities to get recognized. And, I mean, people were patting him on the back at the start of the season, and it didn't come in fruition until now. So, yeah, I mean, but that's your boy. That's, you know, and there's been a lot of drama down there with him and, you know, Mike, the backup, and you know, it's probably a bittersweet there at the end, him doing something very, you know, memorable. I mean, this is a record that's obviously stuck around for a long time, so it's probably going to be a while before anybody breaks.
In my opinion, I don't even think this really has anything to do with that record. I know he mentioned it. But I think what this really has to do with the fact that so many South Carolina fans had kind of cooled on Jake Bentley. They were ready to play Skarnecia. They were booing his ass at home twice, I believe. And now it's kind of like, this is like validation that Jake Bentley is the should be the quarterback and he's the best option and all that. I kind of see what Muschamp is saying. I think Alabama does get favored. But hell, Tua, he scored 6 touchdowns, which is an all-time Alabama record for a single game. He did it in the Iron Bowl on national television. Like, of course.
And they won.
Of course, yeah, they won handily. Of course that guy's going to get recognized. And then if you want to say, you know, the SEC plays favorites, hell, the other co-SEC Offensive Player of the Week was damn Vanderbilt quarterback Kyle Shurmur. Like, when in the hell is the SEC ever favored Vanderbilt, you know? So
right.
His argument, it kind of gets hurt when it's the damn Vanderbilt quarterback that won the award and he's bitching about it because if they show favoritism to South Carolina or Vanderbilt, South Carolina is going to win that match every time.
Yeah, I think that was a shot at Bama for sure.
All right, Chase, how about this? Just a little bit of interesting tidbit here, but apparently I think it's a congressman here in San Antonio, he's introduced a bill to force Texas A&M and Texas to play again.
Oh, wow. Can you do that? I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, Shane, and why I won't mention this, you know, because there is a little bit of added credibility here. Florida and Florida State, and I don't think this was any time recently, but this is decades ago, they did not want to play football, and this is what happened down there. They introduced a bill forcing Florida and Florida State to play. And that, I don't know if it was really necessary or if it just, like, that action said, okay. And then they agreed to start, you know, they would not cancel the series like Texas and Texas A&M have done.
That's awesome.
Hell, I mean, I'm sure the government's got better things to do, but if they bring us back a damn rivalry game, I'm all for it.
Exactly. I mean, these cats ain't played since 2011. So this is one of those outside the SEC games I used to watch. Back when A&M was out of it. So I'm all for it. Yeah, bring them back. I mean, it just helps. That'd be a tough schedule. Man, I could see why Aggies don't want to do it because, you know, Texas has been down for a while, but I don't know. They're on their way up, and you know, hell, they're playing for a championship game Saturday. So I think this is a I don't know. I've never heard of it happening. So it happened with Florida and Florida State, right?
Yeah, long, long time ago.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, hell, try it. Why not?
Okay, Shane, then how about this update? So this is kind of a minor player here, but Kentucky backup quarterback Danny Clark, who was actually a longtime Ohio State commit, so he's pretty highly regarded there in high school. He announced that he's going to leave Kentucky via transfer. He's a redshirt freshman this year, so he's got 3 years left to play. Any thoughts on Kentucky losing some depth there at quarterback?
Nope. I mean, it's Danny Clark, you know. I mean, that's the first time I've heard the name. So, well, the thing is, Mike, I've got, like, limited space in my memory, and anything past the second quarterback is pretty much shot. I mean, I barely know Tennessee's, and I watch them all the time, and I think it's JT Shrout, right?
That's correct.
Just kidding. I know who he is. He's going to be the future, son. But after that, I'm good for two, but don't get me on that three spot unless they just got recruited or something. Or if they're at Georgia, because they're all starters down there.
Well, that's a good transition, Shane, because Georgia, we don't have much on the SEC championship game today. There just wasn't a hell of a lot of news. I know Alabama linebacker Terrell Lewis is back. Well, we kind of already noted that he's back at practice, but we did have a short clip here from Elijah Holyfield. And this is a topic we hit on, Shane. Would Georgia be intimidated by the Crimson Tide? And Elijah Holyfield was asked that. Here's what he had to say.
You're asking, are we intimidated by them?
Yes.
Nah.
They're talking a big game down in Athens, Shane. Is this is the right approach, though, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, hell, this is Holyfield, man. This intimidation's his thing, and he ain't scared. So, plus, he's got, like, 38-inch python, so he's probably really not scared.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about him is he doesn't look like a powerful back, but my God, Shed, he's just trucked damn every team I've seen him play this year.
Oh, yeah.
He is a load. And then when you got a, like I said, he doesn't look like a bruiser, but that's what he is. And then you mix him with DeAndre Swift, who's got that damn dead leg move he's got on him. That's a hell of a combo. That's pretty much exactly what you want, a bruiser and a guy that can break any play that he gets his hands on. A lot of people looked at Georgia and said they're losing two NFL running backs, there'd be a drop-off, and thanks to these two, among with a couple other guys, there's been no drop-off in that backfield.
It's a freaking machine down there. I mean, Bama's been like this. I mean, I don't think that the backfield that they got this year is what they've had in the past, obviously. But, yeah, it's just amazing just how they just keep reloading down there, both those schools.
All right, Shane, that's all I got for today. You got anything before we jump off here?
Ooh, talking about old sound clips, fire up the old mailbag.
Listen up, it's time for mail call.
Don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
My turn, what do you got?
Okay, here we go. What color is a fire truck?
Oh, God, I always get these. All right, fire truck. Fire truck. What are those red fire trucks?
All right, Shane, what do you got from the old mailbag?
This one came from our boy Barnhart there on Twitter. Said he's got a mailbag question, so I thought I'd run it by you here.
All right.
Let's see if I can find it. There it is. A year later, how do you feel about the fan mutiny? What were you feeling then, and do you think for fan bases should do it? Otherwise, you might end up with Mac Brown. So I thought that was a great question, you know, and I'm assuming he's talking about the Shiano fiasco.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't know. Do I think that was the right approach? I don't think it should come to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never seen anything like it before in my entire life, Mike. I mean, I don't think it's ever happened. The fans, I mean, you got to remember, this is Tennessee. We just went through Kiffin leaving. We went through Dooley not recruiting offensive line his last year. We went through Butch Jones. I mean, we kept getting fed, this coach is right for us. And then here comes Shiano, and Shiano had a lot of baggage. And this isn't just they jumped into Shiano. This was they jumped around the entire country teasing us with coaches like Gruden and, you know, kind of like what's going on in Auburn. You know, they're throwing out some of these big names,
mm-hmm.
and then try to sell me on the fact that Shiano is good and great for University of Tennessee. That pissed a lot of people off, and a lot of people did something about it. And it wasn't the people in the streets. I mean, there were some people down there, you know, rioting, and I guess you'd say that. They had loud speakers and stuff like that.
Yep.
It was the boosters, man. It was these big wigs getting your congressmen, senators, people that donate money to the University of Tennessee, getting to the right people, and that's how that thing got shut down. So long story short, I don't think it should happen, but if it does, I ain't going to get mad because I completely understand. What do you think?
Well, Shane, in my mind, what kind of happened and what the former administration there at Tennessee, where they made their mistake, when you try to make a hire, it had a lot more to do with the fact that Shiano had so much baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to hire a guy with baggage, you need to make sure you vet that properly. And they did not do that at all. I mean, how that came about was the damn Dan Wolkin smiley face emoji that we all notoriously saw later.
Yeah.
Because he texted Curry, you know, from whatever his sources were, you know, I hear it's John or I hear it's Shiano. Am I right? And I can't remember what Curry said, but it was basically like, help me pitch this higher. And that's when that's when the smiley face came in. But like I said, if you're hiring someone with baggage, you can't just spring it on people and then just expect them not to react negatively. And hell, if Shiano did not have that connection to the whole Penn State fiasco, which it sounds to me like he really was not very connected to that at all, but people definitely use that against him.
Yeah.
And I think they have every right to do, because it doesn't really matter what I think or you think or whatever. There's people who are going to make up their damn minds by themselves.
Yeah.
And that would have been used against Tennessee in recruiting for the end of time if Shiano was the coach. And I think it was kind of wrong how a lot of that was, you know, I think, what was it, the spray painted that he was like a rapist or something, or,
yeah,
or protected. I thought that was very wrong, but it happened, so we kind of had to cover it. But people have the right to be outraged. But like I said, I think the main thing, and some people have not learned that lesson well, is you have to vet this stuff. And we saw something a little bit similar, Shane, a couple of weeks ago when Maryland decided to bring back their coach, DJ Durkin, and there was an outrage, basically, that, hell, a player has died under this man's watch. And whether he's directly involved or not, whether it was the strength coach or the medical staff or whatever, that head coach is ultimately responsible. Hell, if the head coach is responsible for wins and losses, you better bet your ass that if a player dies, that coach is going to be held responsible. And
yeah,
I think it was about 12 hours later, Maryland was like, all right, well, we made a mistake, clearly. So that was almost a similar situation. But just that was my main takeaway, is you got to vet these guys, whether it's, you know, there was times, which I kind of understand John Curry not wanting to maybe absolutely deny things. But he was asked point blank at times about John Gruden. He was asked about, you know, that coach and this coach. I don't know. You just can't tease people with damn John Gruden and then bring out Shiano and not I never would have expected that kind of reaction, but you got to and I love Tennessee fans, but they're fucking crazy too. So it's like you got to walk that fine line with them. You know, you can't say anything. I don't know. You could say some things but not others. So there's a fine line there, and it was crossed that day, and it was not vetted, and Tennessee fans got drugged by a lot of people.
Yeah.
But in the end, I mean, hell, no one's hiring Shiano now. His defense looks like shit. He's connected to crazy stuff. And what did they say? It was something like, well, we vetted him with Meyer and Gene Smith, who looks like they've covered up domestic violence. So it's like, it completely would have blown up in Tennessee's face, even if they, you know, stuck to their guns and hired Shiano. So, yeah, I mean, you got to credit Tennessee fans. I mean, maybe the way they went about it, some of it was questionable for sure, but I think they were right, and it turned out significantly better. The future of the program under Jeremy Pruitt is still very much in question, but you got to feel infinitely better about the direction than if it was fucking Greg Schiano as the coach right now.
Well, I think what really helped with that situation, I mean, honestly, kind of diffused whoever they brought in, was the fact that they hired Phil Fulmer as the athletic director. Because when he came in and then he chose the coach, you know, it felt like, okay, well, we trust him. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they would have let Bev just hire anybody out there, then we would be, if let's say she hired Pruitt, we'd be like, oh, I can't believe, what does she know, you know, and all that. But the fact that they went their route with getting somebody in there that the Tennessee base loves and supports, even though we fired him several years ago, but, you know, all's forgiven. I love Heavy. I didn't let him go. So, but the fact that he brought in Coach Pruitt, I think a lot of folks were like, okay, let's see how this goes, you know? And I think it's crazy. Like in Auburn, similar situation, you're hearing big names like Stoops and all these heavy hitters, and if they turn around and hire somebody like freaking Jim McElwain or something like that, they're going to go ape nuts down there. And I mean, and it's so funny because I'm seeing a lot of similarities. I'm seeing flight tracks, all this stuff, you know, that Tennessee was doing. And, you know, we kind of paved the way for what a coaching carousel search looks like, you know. Oh, we're prepared, man. But that's all I got, man. I do appreciate all the listeners hanging out with us today. And we did get a ghost review, 5-star heart on iTunes. It didn't, it wasn't a writing thing. So that's why we call it a ghost, and it's getting late. But I appreciate it. I don't know who you are, but you do. And I appreciate you, buddy, or ma'am. But that's all I got. What do you got, brother?
That's it, Shay. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining me. As always, thank you, everyone out there, for tuning in. If you wouldn't mind going that extra step, giving us a 5-star heart on iTunes and a written review, we really appreciate that. It helps out the podcast. But that's going to do it. I'll talk to you on the next one, Shane.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.
Just seems like every damn week SEC is breaking some kind of record in these things. And
yeah, I'm blessed.
All right, I just hollered out.
I'm looking up Danny Clark, and it keeps showing me Daenerys Targaryen. Is that her name?
No, but her name is Emilia Clark, and then her character, they call her Danny.
Oh, okay, I see it now. I was just trying to see what he looked like. Okay.